relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you like America First, then check out our separate podcast, The Battle for 1600, with my former White House colleague, Boris Epstein. Every week, we give you the inside, in-depth analysis of what's really going on. The Battle for 1600. Subscribe today.
This is America First, and here's your host, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
To solve any problem, you have to diagnose it accurately first. You can't cure a disease unless you know which disease it is that you are fighting. And we are suffering from a disease, not just in America, but in the Western world. What you call it exactly? Is it socialism? Is it communism? Is it progressivism veiled in new organizations such as Black Lives Matter and Antifa? We have to answer those questions accurately, and we're going to take this hour of America First to dive deep and get those answers with somebody who, well, let's just say he's been working on these issues for quite some time now, and he has authored a veritable library on the threat we face. He is the director of the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College. He's a good friend of America First, Professor Paul Kengel. Welcome back to the Salem Radio Network.
Well, thank you, Seb. It is always good to be with you. It's an honor.
We're going to talk about various of your books. We're going to talk about the evolution of what it is that we are experiencing in America and elsewhere in Western civilization. But let's work backwards for a moment, if you'll allow us. We are now under the influence of radical organizations, amoeba-like organizations. One of them is the Black Lives Matter organization, which is headed by individuals who quite brazenly admit who they are. This is Patrice Cullors talking about her training and her co-organizer, co-founder's training. Video cut three. Play cuts.
I think of a lot of things. The first thing I think is that we actually do have an ideological frame. Myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists. We are super versed on sort of ideological theories.
Super versed in ideological theories and trained Marxists. So this is personal for me, Professor. If I can ask your assistance, and I mean this very sincerely, as the child of those who escaped a communist regime, my father having been arrested, tortured, and imprisoned by real secret police who bore the marks on his body of that torture till he died. For years, I've had this inability, really, this resistance to say, oh, yeah, these guys are socialists. Oh, Bernie Sanders, BLM, they're communists. Because we don't have the gulags, we don't have the secret police. And I've struggled with verbiage from the right when people say that. But then, after the last 4 years, after I see what happened to Mike Flynn, after I see what Obama did with the IRS, after I look at the danger of this January 6th commission that Nancy Pelosi wants to have, I'm forced into a corner where I feel I have to reassess my reticence. You are the historian. You've written so many books, the amazing one, the most recent one, The Devil and Karl Marx. My favorite before that was Dupes. We're going to discuss these at length. But is it fair to people like my parents, to the 100 million who were killed by Marxist ideology to say that what we are witnessing in America is Marxism? What is the correct taxonomy, Professor?
Well, you're completely justified in all of this, and horrible as what your father went through, Seb. You know, he was one of millions who went through that. And, you know, the reason why we haven't had that kind of thing in this country is that this country has resisted Marxism. It's fought against Marxism. And, you know, that phrase dupes, as you and I know, that refers to Western progressives or liberals going back to the 1910s and 1920s who were suckered into believing that communism, Marxism was okay. People from H.G. Wells and Margaret Sanger to George Bernard Shaw, Walter Duranty, the New York Times man in Moscow. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And we in the United States have always overcome that by people who weren't duped. In fact, let me say there to show people our credibility, you and I both coming to this issue. For you and I both, one of our heroes is Ronald Reagan. Who defeated communism in Eastern Europe, Soviet Union. Reagan had been a dupe. Reagan was a dupe in the 1940s when Reagan was an FDR Democrat. You know, Ronald Reagan was invited to give all these speeches in Hollywood in the late 1940s. He called himself a hemophiliac liberal, a bleeding heart liberal. And then he came to realize at one point that, you know, the Reds weren't under the bed, they were in the bed. He was speaking and joining, he said, I joined every progressive group under the sun. And he soon realized that a lot of these progressive groups were just using the word progressive as a label to appeal to liberal progressives, when in fact many of them were Marxists, including Hollywood 10 members. All members of the Hollywood 10 out of 10 were Marxists. In that book, Dupes, I give their five-digit Communist Party USA numbers. We knew those when they testified before Congress October 25th through 27th, 1947. So we've known for over 70 years that they were party members. That meant they swore a loyalty oath to Stalin's Soviet Union. So the Marxism matters. We've resisted this. We know how important it is. And we'll be okay in America so long as we call this out and don't get taken in by these ideologies. And it requires people who are not just historians like you and I both, but people who've had personal experience with these people stepping up and talking about it so America doesn't ever go that far down that road.
Will you explain, because for me, even, you know, despite my family history, a seminal moment, in addition to reading everything you've written, was reading Andrew Breitbart's autobiography, Righteous Indignation, where he speaks of the moment where he woke up as a unthinking liberal at Tulane University when he saw what happened to Clarence Thomas, and he said, well, this is wrong. This is Marxism of another flavor. This is the destruction of somebody simply because he dares to be a black conservative. Explain for our listeners, our millions of viewers and listeners across the nation, what the long march through the institutions is and what we are witnessing today as a product of that.
Yeah, so that's a phrase attributed to Antonio Gramsci, who's one of the leading proponents of applying Marxism to culture, right? So what you would call cultural Marxism, although if you look it up, now a nasty little box pops up on Google referring to as something like white nationalist or white supremacist or anti-Semitic conspiracy theory or something like that. I wrote two articles on it for American Spectator just on this idea of cultural Marxism and conspiracy. But in fact, if you this is going too deep into the weeds, but I have screenshots of Wikipedia dating back 15 years ago that define cultural Marxism correctly.
which have now been memory-holed in Orwellian tradition.
It's amazing. And by the way, there are a lot of left-wing Marxist scholars, right, who are seeing that now and going, oh, no, man, I'm going to be in big trouble. I'm not an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. What is this? I've been writing for cultural Marxism for 30 or 40 years. It's now an anti-Semitic conspiracy. According to who, right? Some faceless 19-year-old that types this stuff up for Google? It's insane. But it's been
what is the philosophy of the Adorno-esque Marcuse Gramsciite? What is the long march through institutions when they realize that violent revolution in countries with robust middle classes wouldn't happen? What was their response, Paul?
Well, and that's the Frankfurt School. So let me differentiate between Antonio Gramsci, who, by the way, was not Jewish, as far as I know. I don't look up who's a Jew and who isn't a Jew, right? I don't even think like that. But Antonio Gramsci was Italian. He was thrown into prison by Mussolini, died in prison in the 1930s, and he applied Marxism to culture. That phrase, Long March Through the Institutions, by the way, Seb, the definitive work on that was by a Notre Dame professor named Joseph Buttigieg.
Who is Joseph the father?
Buttigieg of Pete, of Mayor Pete. And it's two-volume set published by Columbia University Press of Antonio Gramsci's prison notebooks. And he acknowledges Pete in there for Pete's help in the book with the index in particular. So Pete knows this stuff, right? And if you go to the website of the International Gramsci Society, which was founded by Joseph Buttigieg, to this day, maybe, I haven't checked that in the last few weeks, but the lead page is a tribute, in memoriam, to Joseph Buttigieg, who died, I think, at the start of 2019 or 2018. So he's the leading scholar on that. Then there's the Frankfurt School, which developed out of Frankfurt, Germany, 1920s, 1930s.
We will discuss, because it deserves its own segment, we will discuss the Frankfurt School momentarily. But did you just get that? Did you get that peek behind the curtain, my friends? The biggest historian of the most important cultural Marxist figure is the father, the late father, of the current cabinet member of the Biden administration, Mayor Buttigieg. So much more to discuss with the author of The Devil and Karl Marx, Dr. Paul Kengor. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network. Relief Factor. Have you tried every other form of pain relief only to fail and not find your answer? Well, try this incredible product that is providing liberation from pain to tens of thousands of Americans across the country, including Alicia from California. I'm a grocery store worker and have been working doubles during this coronavirus shutdown. At 52 years old, my two bad knees are not getting a rest. I literally limp to and from bed. 2 days into Relief Factor and the pain has decreased substantially. So thankful for this amazing product. That could be you. It should be you. Find out today the only way you can by ordering the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. Call them at 800-500-8384. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening just like I do. And I promise you, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Alicia, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What have you got to lose except the pain? Do it today. 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com.
Wake up, we have breakfast, and then we usually play some games. And then if you're older, we might have like a Bible study before worship. We worship till lunch, and it's a blast, you know? Everybody's jumping, we're singing. After lunch, we didn't have like free time. We do crafts, we go swimming, we do all that stuff, all that fun stuff. I mean, I love camp. That's why I want to keep coming back.
Can you hear the joy in his voice? That's Delton, who went to the Angel Tree camp because he had lost a parent to the prison system, loved it so much, he came back as a camp counselor. We are trying to help as many of the millions of children in America today in a similar situation, those who've lost a mother or father or both of their parents to prison, children who run a 70% chance of ending up behind bars themselves. Will you help? Will you help break that cycle? Make a donation today for any amount. We will collect them together, but $200 provides for a child like Delton was for a whole week in that Christ-centric, safe summer camp environment. Go to our webpage today, sebgorka.com. That's S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorka.com, and click on the Angel Tree banner at the top. Make a donation for any amount. $200 is a child for a week. $1,000 is five 5 children like Delton. Make a difference today. Call them directly with your donation if you wish on 888-206-2794. That's 888-206-2794. Remember what our Lord and Savior told us. Come unto me, the little children. This is how you help the most vulnerable in society. Be a modern missionary. Help the children. SebGorka.com, Angel Tree Banner at the top. We are back with our good friend. He is the author of a library of works on the threat of socialism. The latest is The Devil and Karl Marx, which we will discuss momentarily, but you've got to get it right now. I have my signed copy right here with me in studio. Second favorite I have is Dupes. How they conned their way into Western society. Check them and all the others out. Paul, at the end of the last segment, you mentioned the Frankfurt School, which is really the seminal point. It's the center of gravity of how these bad ideas went from Europe to the United States. What is the Frankfurt School? Who was in it? And what ideas did it propagate?
Yeah, so it developed out of Frankfurt, Germany in the 1920s. Probably the two most important leaders were Max Horkheimer and Theodor Adorno. There were a number of other people involved, a whole bunch of different people. Erich Fromm, Herbert Marcuse was probably the most important of all of them. And of all things, they fused the ideas of the worst philosopher of the 19th century, Karl Marx, with the ideas of the worst philosopher of the early 20th century, Freud. Freud. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine, of all things, right? I mean, somebody put me in the room with the guys who are saying, hey, I got a great idea. Let's take Marx and Freud and create a school of thought between the two. Let's fuse these ideas, right?
Probably, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the two most dangerous thinkers of the modern age are Marx and Freud. Do you concur?
Right? I think so, yeah. And I mean, Freud's ideas lead to Kinsey and others. And by the way, another person here who's kind of not necessarily part of the Frankfurt School, but he's connected to it and he's part of this whole milieu, was Wilhelm Reich, who wrote the book and quite literally coined the term the sexual revolution. That term, the sexual revolution, was from Wilhelm Reich, a Marxist, right? A sexual Freudian Marxist. And if you read that book and you read his other books and read his memoirs, I mean, it's unbelievable, Seb. I mean, the guy is talking about, I mean, can I say this on Salem Radio?
You got to watch the FCC guidelines. So
talking about lusting for having sex with the family maid, jumping in bed with her when he was like 5 or 6 years old, lusting after thinking about having sex with his mother, stimulating the farm animals. Chronic, uncontrolled, hourly masturbation at like the age of 8. I mean, crazy stuff.
And these are the people who are lauded by the so-called new left.
Yeah, and Reich was so insane in this stuff that he appalled the Bolsheviks. I mean, the Bolsheviks wanted him out of the Soviet Union. Get out! His ideas were too radical, but he was heavily influential upon people in the 1950s, 1960s, a kind of sexual, cultural Marxist left. And the most important of all the Frankfurt School people was Herbert Marcuse, which is spelled like Marcuse, M-A-R-C-U-S-E, pronounced Marcuse, who became the guru to the 1960s New Left. Mark Rudd, Bill Ayers, Bernardine Dorn, The Weather Underground, Students for a Democratic Society. His most famous pupil is Angela Davis, who to this day is the most famous female Marxist in the United States. She ran for Vice President of the United States on the Communist Party USA ticket, 1976-1980. She won the Lenin Peace Prize in 1979. You can find her online with Erich Honecker, who built the Berlin Wall with Fidel Castro. You could find her in 2017, Seb, January 2017, as one of the honorary co-chairs of the Women's March in Washington. And you could find her right now writing the foreword to the memoirs of Patrice Cullors' memoir.
The co-founder of BLM. And if we return to Marcuse, because we have to link all of this stuff to today, like BLM, his seminal contribution is this essay on the tolerance or the intolerance, so that where he says
repressive
tolerance, where he says no tolerance today means that we mustn't be tolerant to certain ideas. So he just inverts the meaning, which really sows the seeds for today's cancel culture. Correct.
Yeah, in fact, the exact phrase, and people, you can look it up. It's real easy to find. Just type in Herbert Marcuse, repressive tolerance. And he calls for toleration of movements from the left and for not tolerating movements from the right. And so when you see this on college campuses today, you say, yeah, I don't get this. They're talking about toleration, but they're only tolerating ideas from the left, right? If you have a conservative viewpoint, man, they shut you down. They cancel you. They disinvite you, everything. What are they talking about? What's precisely what Marcuse advocated in the 1960s? And the crazy thing is that you can be put on the right today for advocating things that have defined Western civilization for 2,000 years. I mean, take a sexual cultural example. If you believe that marriage should be defined as between one man and one woman, right, as the entirety of the Democratic Party did in the Defense of Marriage Act in 1995, as Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton did in early 2012, before they both changed that year, that campaign year, now all of a sudden you find yourself not just a supporter of, say, traditional biblical Christian marriage, right? You know, aligned with 99.999% of humanity.
You're an extremist. If you believe in biology, if you believe a man is a man, a woman is a woman, you are now an extremist. He is the author of A Pope, A President, also The Politically Incorrect Guide to Communism. He's our special guest here on America First, Paul Kengor. Follow him at faithandfreedom.com. I'm Sebastian Gorka. Whether it's the regular Hellcat or whether it's the compensated RDP with that miniature red dot, I love them all. How did it take so long to invent a factory compensated subcompact 9mm? Well, guess what? Springfield did it, and I'm a huge fan. And I'm Sebastian Gorka.
The Hellcat from Springfield Armory is still the smallest, highest capacity micro compact in the world. Available in standard or optics-ready configurations, the class-leading capacity of the Hellcat gives you 11+1 with the standard magazine and 13+1 with the included extended mag. The definitive concealed carry pistol is here. The Hellcat from Springfield Armory gives you the capacity to defend. This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
He's the head of the Institute for Faith and Freedom, political scientist, professor at Grove City College, the author of just seminal works on the threat of communism, socialism. Follow him and his colleagues at faithandfreedom.com. And he reminds us of what went before and that it can be done. Let's listen to Ronald Reagan calling out the communist leader of the Soviet Union, a speech which truly made history. Cut to.
General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Less than a year and a half later, it was dismantled by the citizens trapped behind that wall with hand tools, with chisels and pickaxes. Again, I implore you to help me. I watched that chilly November night with joy as the Berlin Wall was dismantled by those it had entrapped. And then I thought we'd won. Paul, did we win or did we lose?
Well, we won it on the battlefield, or at least in the international arena, but we lost it in the classroom in the United States. And pretty much ever since, or by the time I went to graduate school in the early 1990s, I started teaching at Grove City College in 1997. And the past 24, 25 years, Seb, I've been going around the country invited by desperate students, YAF chapters, ISI chapters on different college campuses, from students asking me to give a talk with titles like, "Why is communism bad?" Because they're not learning these things. They're not learning these things on college campuses. And oftentimes, I remember late 90s, early 2000s with like the Harvard University press book, the Black Book of Communism.
Yes.
Through the different death tolls and all the different numbers. And I remember one professor one time, very progressive, liberal professor, and she stared at me, Seb, like looked at me as if the ghost of Joe McCarthy had leapt inside of my body and possessed me, right? Like, okay, professor, take it easy on the commie bashing and the red crusading. And all I'm trying to do is teach young people crucial history of the last generation or two that they didn't know about the deadliest ideology in history. And what often happens with the left is they don't attack or even criticize the pro-communists. They criticize and attack the anti-communists, right? The anti-communists are the bad guys. So they look at people like me and you as if we're weird, right? We're the extremists for even talking about this stuff. But it's because of the liberal-run universities that this stuff hasn't been taught and hasn't been talked about that you now have, in some polls, a quarter to a third of young people saying that they would support the abolition of private property.
Not only that, that the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, with its annual poll with YouGov, finding out that two-thirds of American millennials would prefer to live in a socialist or conservative or communist America, despite the fact that that book you mentioned, which is a life-changing book, the Black Book of Communism, which simply calculated the death cost to the world of Marxism, was written by socialists, by left-wing historians. Stephen Courtois was a left-winger when he started that project, and when he found out that the death toll was over 100 million souls killed. Forget the rest who were enslaved, who were kicked out of their jobs, sent to labor camps, tortured. No, 100 million killed alone. That's the Black Book of Communism. Another one to add to your library, along with Paul Kengor's, especially his most recent one, which is The Devil and Karl Marx. The Devil and Karl Marx. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. If you want to do yourself a favor, if you want to support Talk Radio, support those that make the show possible, especially the great Mike Lindell. Mike, the inventor of MyPillow, is a great patriot, a truth teller, and now they're trying to cancel him with 25 corporations boycotting his products. Get up to 66% off when you use my name. Go straight to his website. More than 100 incredible, incredible products, including the pillow that never gets hot, never loses shape, 10-year guarantee. President Trump loves them. My whole team uses them. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-829-8468. That's 800-829-8468. MyPillow.com. Promo code GORKA. Back after these messages.
The first country to attempt and to succeed in rolling back the frontiers of socialism, which is the first cousin to communism. No one else tried it. We were the first to do it. I remember some politicians saying, "We're watching you very carefully, Mrs. Thatcher, to see if you succeed." We did.
Oh, yes, she did. I was there. I was a young child in the UK when Margaret Thatcher rolled back socialism one picket line at a time. And she's right. First cousins to communism, where are those leaders today? Whether it's Ronald Reagan, Margaret Thatcher, or St. John Paul II, that's how we won that ideological war. Let's continue to discuss the current situation with the author of The Devil and Karl Marx, as well as many other works, Professor Paul Kengor, director of the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College. Follow their work at faithandfreedom.com. Margaret Thatcher, if she were alive today, Paul, wouldn't she be the kind of person that Patrice Couleurs of Black Lives Matter would want to abolish? Because she says she's an abolitionist, correct? What kind of abolitionist are we talking about?
Yeah, it's a really remarkable thing. I wrote a piece on it for American Spectator called Patrice Cullors, founder of BLM, Marxist Abolitionist. And she calls herself both Marxist and abolitionist. So there's no exaggeration there. In fact, in the opening segment, you quoted her saying that we, and there she's speaking on behalf of BLM, plural, right? And she speaks of herself and Alicia Garza, one of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter. She says, we are trained Marxists. We are trained Marxist organizers. We are super versed in ideological theories, including critical theory. And critical theory, of course, is the first cousin of critical race theory. But in her latest, she has a video out now called Why I Am an Abolitionist. And she refers to herself as an abolitionist. She said she calls for, she says, not just abolishing the police. And by the way, she says, when I say abolish, I mean getting rid of.
Okay. Yes.
She says getting rid of police, prisons and jails, courts and surveillance. Let me repeat that. Police, prisons and jails, courts and surveillance. And she says, when I say abolish, I mean getting rid of. So in this article that I wrote on this, it's really important for people to understand that term abolition. Marx used the word abolition probably more than any other. The only close runner to this would be criticism. He called for the ruthless criticism of everything that exists. As for abolition in the Communist Manifesto, he and Engels called for, quote, abolition of the present state of things. All right. You know, is that all?
That reminds me of certain protests across America over the last year, Paul.
Well, and I get emails all the time from people saying, why do you pick on Karl Marx? He was just criticizing working class conditions in the 19th century. No, that's not all he was doing. Read his book, right? In the Communist Manifesto, he calls for abolition of the present state of things, abolition of religion, all morality, quote, abolition of the family, exclamation mark. Even the most radical flare up at this infamous proposal of the communists, unquote. That's Marx and Engels in the Communist Manifesto.
And that's
this guy wanted to tear down everything.
And that's one of the things that has been stealth deleted from the website of BLM, that they wish to dismantle the traditional nuclear family. However, I'd like you to react to this. Almost every other day now, we are getting examples of people who have woken up and have seen the light and are pushing back. This is a mother from New York, from Carmel Education District. Cut three.
I have a problem when teachers are passing out flyers, recruiting children to go to the courthouse to protest Black Lives Matters, when you have people sitting with signs that says all cops are bastards. Really? All cops are bastards? No, I think you people are, because the way you're acting and the way you're treating our children and our police officers and making them believe that it's okay to abuse them, I'll be damned if I'm going to sit here and let you do that. I will become your worst nightmare, because I'm going to stand here and keep fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting.
Thank you.
And if not, I can actually go out, get signatures. What happens if we stop paying school taxes? You're going to arrest all the community, the majority of the community? No, I don't think so. This won't be the last of me. I want everyone to know what's going on, because you're hiding it. You're hiding it. You know who does that? Communists do that.
Communists do that. Aren't you buoyed when you see something like that, Paul?
I'll tell you, David Clark, the African-American sheriff from Milwaukee County, he said, abolish the police. He said, you'd have to loathe black people to do that to them. It's the police that are standing between them and anarchy. And at the BLM website, they have scrubbed the term that they favor abolishing the Western prescribed nuclear family structure. But what they haven't removed is this phrase, quote, we know that the police don't keep us safe. Let me repeat that.
Wow.
We know that the police don't keep us safe. Could you imagine a statement like that? The police don't keep, by the way, in a lot of these major cities, probably half the police force is African American. So what could be more reckless and irresponsible than calling for the getting rid of or abolition of police, prisons and jails, surveillance and courts, right? But you know, she says she, Patrice Cullors is writing a book called The Abolitionist Handbook. Marx was an abolitionist. Lenin was an abolitionist. You know, Marx said, everything that exists deserves to perish. And by the way, that was a quote from the Mephistopheles character, the demon devil character in Goethe's Faust. It was Marx's favorite line. Everything that exists deserves to perish. These guys aren't just about criticizing the working class working conditions. They're about reinventing and abolishing.
And if you want to understand how all of this is connected to every other branch, well, read my book, The War for America's Soul, and you'll find out who Saul Alinsky is. Saul Alinsky, who Andrew Breitbart called, if Marx is Jesus, then Saul Alinsky is his Saint Paul. He turned that gospel, that evil, wicked gospel, into a praxis, into a doctrine. And his book, Saul Alinsky's, where Hillary Clinton interned, dedicated his work, Rules for Radicals. And if you don't believe me, you don't have to look it up. He dedicated it to the world's first revolutionary, Lucifer. That's why this man's latest book is called The Devil and Karl Marx. He is Paul Kengel. Follow him at faithandfreedom.com. I'm Sebastian Gorka, back with the good professor momentarily.
Portions of today's program are brought to you by Prison Fellowship.
There is a danger when interviewing politicians or academics that they don't always answer the question you set them. So I'm going to try one more time with the great Paul Kengel, author of The Devil and Karl Marx. Are you buoyed? Are you happy when you see mothers like that mother in New York who say, you're not going to teach communist claptrap to my kids? Or the other story of that PE teacher in Virginia who said, I'm sorry, my faith precludes me from calling a boy a girl just because he says he is. Are those glimmers of hope, Paul? Are we? What is your sense after years, decades of studying this? Is America turning a corner in its appreciation of the socialist and communist threat?
Well, some people are, but too many people are afraid. And you know, that mother is not afraid. Be not afraid, right? She's not afraid. And something really important for people to understand, and Seb, you and I have both experienced it, when people are going to attack you no matter what.
Right.
And if you don't stand up for it, they're going to come after your kids with these ideas. So you ought to have the courage to stand up for your kids and what your kids are being taught. But something that you and I have both seen is that when they come after you on social media or whatever else, if you stand on principle and stand for the truth, and frankly, if you usually respond with charity and decency, they usually move on to another target, somebody that they can bully and get to buckle, somebody that they can silence. So the people who stand up for what they believe, they usually just move on to somebody else, and then they end up ignoring you. But you have to stand up for what's right.
And how crucial is that? I think it was in his Harvard speech originally, but it flows through all of his work. Was Solzhenitsyn's cry to all of us that if the one thing you mustn't do is you mustn't live a lie through your actions, through what you say, you mustn't reinforce the lies of others. Isn't that all we need to start doing, Paul Kengel?
That's right. What Vaclav Havel called the communist culture of the lie. And to connect Solzhenitsyn to your father that you mentioned earlier, they went to prison, right? They were tortured. They were mistreated, but they were willing to stand up for the truth. And sometimes what you need are people who are put through that crucible, people who've carried the cross, right? Those are the people who are willing to stand up for the truth. Too many people are cowards and they're afraid and they're not willing to stand up for the truth.
It's how you lose your freedom. It's time to be faithful to the truth for many, many people. It's definitive. We may have lost an election, but the former president exhorted us to make sure one thing doesn't happen to America. And on this day especially, we're going to close with something that it's not up to him now. It's up to us as well. This is what he said.
And to those who would try to impose socialism on the United States, we again deliver a very simple message. America will never be a socialist country.